You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not to cover a newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to achieve attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone in public, excuse me. Wasn't my cake, I needed to. Wouldn't it both way? Fame may be a balloon.
It's a very good Thursday morning to you. Mike McNamara in for a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. Right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. How about the World Series last night? You know, it's very interesting that there's this move afoot in baseball that says that, you know, the statistical geeks, they're called sabermetrics, and if you just follow the statistics, that you get rewarded. So the manager of the Dodgers, his pitched four innings, and he's given up one run, and he takes him out in the fourth inning. He asks the guy who's closes for him, who pitched an inning last night, he brings him in to pitch two innings tonight, and guess what happens? Gives up the lead. Because doesn't do that very often, if at all. So, I find it very interesting because there's a little bit of that in the military. Can't replace the human factor in it. Yeah, I know what statistics say, but I know what I'm watching here. And a statistical average gets made up of performances that go here and other performances that go there. This guy's going here today. So do you want me to be faithful to the average and remove him? And so it was interesting. And then if you can imagine that, the Dodgers had used every player and every relief pitcher by the 10th inning. The 10th inning is like, okay, that's one extra inning. So it's pretty interesting little tidbit to watch in terms of the whole revolution in baseball with statistics. And Houston scores in the ninth to tie it. The Dodgers come back to tie them. Pretty crazy stuff. And then Houston went ahead. For those of you who don't know, my father used to manage in Major League Baseball. In fact, yesterday was the 31st anniversary of a little bit of baseball history involving my family, and that was the ball going through Bill Buckner's legs in the Red Sox-Mets World Series. Yeah, I'm sitting in Shea Stadium for that one there, sports fan. And let me give you some advice. If you ever have anything like that happen to your family, pray that it happens in Minneapolis, Kansas City, some really nice Midwestern town, okay, because it was a below-average experience in New York City, let me tell you. But, I was raised in baseball. In fact, that's where my whole desire, you know, being a platoon commander really made sense to me because I had watched my dad do that virtually my whole life, and I knew I'd be good at it. And so I joined the Marine Corps with an aviation contract. I didn't know anything about the Marine Corps other than what I saw on TV, yeah. I mean, and I think there's a fair amount of guys like me. And then after going through OCS, you know, the whole leadership thing made sense to me. I watched my dad do it. Counsel in private, you know, praise in public, you know, after ball games, before ball games in his office with the door shut. I knew that I couldn't go in and talk to him if the door was shut. What were you talking about on the ride home? Dad, why was the door shut? Who were you talking to? Oh, so-and-so. You know, he's having problems. He and his wife are having problems with their baby. He's not sleeping well, and he thinks it's beginning to affect his play, and he's struggling. And so we just talked about it. And, you know, you watch your dad be a platoon commander. and more of like a company commander because he had subordinates working for him. So when I got to the basic school, the more I looked around, that's how I became a grunt. Was I said, you know what, that looks really cool and that picture looks really cool, but that's not what, this is what I know. I know playing on teams. I know being a leader. I know I watched my dad be a platoon commander my whole life. And so that's how I thought, you know what, I should probably be a grunt. Yeah. Yep. That was it. And so, so there you have it. Mike McNamara becomes a grunt. But it was a whole leadership thing. So I always watch, and I always viewed in terms of tactical decision-making. I used to watch my dad do that. So on a nightly basis, if you could imagine a baseball lineup card, if you know who pitched last night, if you know who's hurt and probably can't either pitch or pinch hit tonight, and then you know who matches up with who a little bit, you can take a lineup card and you'll make every move that gets made in a baseball game pretty close, unless you just don't know anything. But if you know something about the game, because there's not that many just straight up options in this situation with this score, right? With this matchup, this guy needs to be there. I used to watch him. You know, he was managing the Padres when I was in high school. And he didn't have a whole lot of, you know, he's a third world nation. And teams like the Cincinnati Reds would come in and Sparky Anderson, and he had every gun in the world at his disposal. He had him coming off the bench. He had him as starting pitchers. He had him coming out of the bullpen, pinch hitting, you name it. Anything, any way this matchup went, he beat you. And so I got raised around that engineering matchup. So it, all of that made sense to me. So I enjoy watching baseball for a lot of different reasons. That being one of them, I enjoy watching the matchups. And last night, I tell you, the Dodgers outmanaged themselves. And I'm sure that I haven't read the quotes, but I'm sure what you're going to hear is, I'd do the exact same thing again tonight. Yeah, well, you probably ought not to. Okay, you probably ought not to. So anyway, good morning. World Series tied 1-1. The biggest problem, though, the Dodgers have is in a series like that, you allow the other team. Now Houston gets off the mat instead of losing two at Dodger Stadium and going home, down. You just breathe a little life into them. Now they think they can play with you. Now you've got a problem. So anyway, the World Series, yeah, started yesterday. 93 degrees when they dropped the puck in Los Angeles yesterday. They didn't really drop the puck. That was kind of a joke. That's a hockey term. When they threw out the first pitch. And throwing out the first pitch, speaking of that, Vin Scully might be one of the nicest men ever if you're a baseball fan. He's broadcasted Dodger games. This is the first year he hasn't since the early 50s. And so you can imagine, if you are, let's just say you were born in 1945. So what are you, 55 and 17? That would be 65... 72. So if you're 72 years of age and younger, you've only heard one person ever broadcast a Dodger baseball game. Yeah, one guy, Vin Scully, for all those years. Anyway, so he threw out the first pitch yesterday. It was pretty cool the way they honored him. And he's a huge icon in Los Angeles and a wonderful man. His first wife committed suicide. He had a son killed in a plane crash. He's just, having met him, he's just really a warm, very nice, piece of baseball history. And so the Dodgers honored him. So let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to finish up our Beirut thing, kind of. I made a mistake. Phil Smith, who you've heard on the program before, reached out to Ray Smith, who was the battalion commander of 1-8 when they went to Grenada and then to into Lebanon. And he's going to join us. But I didn't see General Smith's email saying that he could do it, so I screwed it up. So I'll reach out to him, and we'll get him to come on. And then the only other thing I want you to hear is Eric Hamill. I did an interview with him, so I'd like you to hear that. But we'll finish up Ron Baskowski, about 15 minutes of his the interview from yesterday, where he talks about getting to Beirut, being in L&O to the French there, what he learned from the French. So on the ground in Beirut, and then Ron will talk about really interesting part of the interview. It comes at the end of, you know, where he says, can we talk about mental health, to me? And so, you know, all these years living with that, with Beirut, you know, and so it's real interesting when you hear, you know, what guys try to stuff away in the jack-in-the-box, shut the lid and never go near it. Whether you try to shove Vietnam in there, whether you try to shove Beirut in there, whether you try to shove the Mayaguez incident, which we need to kind of take a look at, which is, you know, unbelievable story involving Marines. And so so you'll hear him talk about post-combat related mental health and the struggle that he had, and that he thought, you know, I can handle this, and, you know, and then slowly but surely concluding, I can't handle it. I need help. So Ron Baskowski again, and he a good guy, and you know, he made a comment that made me laugh in the interview, where he said, you know, he had a confidence problem. His guy went to the Naval Academy, right? And he was escorted when he was a first lieutenant, and I mean, he was very the things you don't forget as a second lieutenant. Here's this first lieutenant gonna give us an order, and, you know, be, you know, our instructor for squad in the attack. And he's a scoreway guy, very deliberate in the way he spoke, very clear in the things that he said, and very respectful to us as lieutenants. But he talked about having a confidence issue that, you know, and he did look young when he came back as a, you know, first lieutenant captain. He, you know, he looked like he could have, you know, he could have swapped out collar insignia, and he would have looked like any second lieutenant in the, because he looked that young. And he said, you know, and he struggled with that sometimes. So, anyway, interesting stuff, interesting insights as kind of you walk through a larger issue, the issue of Beirut. So we'll do that today. We'll check the news headlines here, and then the gunner is going to join us, and that'll be Thursday. No live program tomorrow. I'm going to put a bunch of best of stuff on. So if you're interested in hearing guys like Zinni, Kelly, Alan, Jeremiah Workman, that'll be on. Kind of do the best of over the weekend. I have to move, help my sister move her stuff from Indiana to California. So I fly to Indiana tonight, this afternoon, and load the truck in the morning, and hopefully by sometime tomorrow afternoon head west to be back here on Monday. So that's the plan. Got it? All right. So we'll check news headlines coming up here. The United States Marine Corps band makes it official. Good morning to you. Let me read you a quick email. which is an introduction into motivation today. Mac, honestly, can the nation descend further in terms of the behavior of our political leaders? Good God. It's not like digging up dirt on somebody is anything new. Why wouldn't you come out and admit it, though? That's the lying piece. That's what I don't get. Call it political research, call it whatever you want. But to lie about it, it makes you look really, really stupid and continues the downward spiral of people that we used to call political leaders. I believe you're right. We should only refer to them as politicians. So, based on that, here's a little motivation for today.
God knows!
Can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
All right, the weather. Mostly cloudy and 54 in Quantico. Sunny and 55 at Camp Lejeune. Mostly sunny and 68, warm in Texas. In Granbury, Texas. Big Timber, Montana got cold. Clouds on 32. They've got weather, snow type headed that direction. Sunny in 64 and 29 Palms. That's pretty normal. And last report from Camp Pendleton was dark and 50 degrees, but that should be updated. Okinawa continues its cooling trend. Cloudy, dark, 77. Raqqa, sunny and 80. Marja, dark, clear, and 74. At the home of All Marine Radio, 62 merciful degrees. Only going to get to 86 today. Winds are calm. Down to 61 tonight. Tomorrow, 82. Saturday, 82. And then on Sunday, 77. Unbelievable. 100 degrees yesterday. Global warming, baby. All right, we're going to check some news headlines here. On our way to listening to about Beirut. And somebody sent me, here's another email about Beirut. So I've listened to Beirut this week, and I got Google Earth out, and I checked it out. So we put Marines as peacekeepers in the middle of this shit sandwich. The Chouf Mountains dominating their position. We give them these ridiculous rules of engagement. Listening to General Baskowski, it's funny. Baskowski gets spelled about 800 different ways, too, by the way. It's got too many consonants, I know. They had situationally dependent ROE, which is not abnormal, but to the extent they went is what amazes me. And how restricted they were. we think rules of engagement are restricted now. I had friends that told me that if you were going to engage somebody, you had to shout warnings in both Arabic and French before you open fire. Really? Do you think somebody's getting the Marine Corps confused with the Peace Corps? And into that, the Marines from BLT-18 went. Pretty brutal. Pretty brutal. I've enjoyed the learning experience this week. Thank you very much. Now, hey, it's what we do. I mean, it's one of the, again, it's one of the largest loss of life since on any given day for the Marine Corps since Iwo Jima. And again, remember, Okinawa after Iwo Jima. So, anyway, that's what I read here recently. So, that's the footnote. News headlines. We'll check some headlines in Marine Corps Times, see if they have anything interesting going on. And headline, logisticians need to get deceptive. Supplies must be distributed. Right. In medical marijuana debate, more veterans head to Capitol Hill. U.S. suspects, Niger villager betrayed U.S. Army troops. Take it to the bank, folks. John McCain's returning to his alma mater, the United States Naval Academy, to address the midshipmen on leadership and service to the nation. Iraqi Kurds offer to freeze results of independence vote. So, in exchange for, leave us alone. Yeah, so a few interesting headlines here from Early Bird. Top five headlines. Number one, NATO official, Turkey faces consequences if purchase of S-400 is completed. Top NATO official warned of necessary consequences for Turkey should the alliance member purchase a Russian air defense system. Again, to me, Turkey is going to descend into what Syria now is. And if you want to dance with the devil, then dance with the Russians. And then we'll see what happens. Qatar and Russia signed an agreement on air defense and supplies. Here's another interesting one. Qatar signed a military technical cooperation agreement and memorandum of understanding on air defense and military supplies with Russia on Thursday, a statement from the Qatari Defense Ministry said. So, film at 11, stand by on that one. Is that a shot across our bow? Hey, we don't need you. We'll shut your base down. We got the Russians. Again, you want the Russians? Have at it. Navy puts three carrier strike groups in the 7th Fleet. Again, which is interesting because, you know, I'm looking for footnotes, and I haven't seen them in any articles. Are those three going to be there? Is one heading in, one going home, and just being extended for a week or two as the president heads toward North Korea? What is this whole three carrier battle groups in the 7th Fleet? And then the fifth story in the Early Bird this morning is China says defense ties inject positive energy into U.S. relations. Well, that's good, because we need some positive energy. We need some positive energy into that, because, you know, China with the South China Sea event, and also, you know, they are on a collision course with Japan in the East China Sea. So whatever we can do to make it happy, we should absolutely positively do that, because it seems like everywhere in the world we butt up against China. So I think somebody's whistling past somebody's putting a happy face on something. You know, one of the other interesting things about the news now is when you talk about Special Forces mission, everybody thinks, when they think Special Forces, they think direct action. And really, the longest and the most enduring mission of our Special Forces is not the direct action door-kicking crew. It is the Green Berets and the development of emerging nations and their military. But the nation's getting a bit of an education on that. So it's so it's an interesting. So it's interesting to go ahead and watch that education play, take place. And I heard somebody, I heard, you know, a commentator, I want to say it was on Fox, say, you know, the SEALs Delta Force have been engaging in these kind of operations. You know, yeah, that's not what they do there, sports fans. Those guys are high-end boutique players. They do not go into third world countries and go ahead and develop these kind of capabilities. These are United States Army Special Forces, Green Berets that go in and do this kind of stuff. Now, you might get SEALs that go in and do training with very, very high end to create a direct action capability for those guys. It ain't SEAL Team 6, though, right? It's not the all-star team. It is another SEAL team that is doing very specific training with a very high-end group. But what we're talking about here, the kind of mission that was ambushed, that's a different group of people. Another, this is from Jamie McIntyre, who's been reporting on the Pentagon forever. ISIS under fresh assault in its last bastion in Iraq. This morning, Iraqi forces are on the move against the last remaining pockets of the Islamic State in the western part of Iraq near the Syrian border. In a statement from Baghdad, Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi says ISIS members will have to choose between death and surrender in announcing the offensive operations in the region of Al-Qaim and Rawa. Yeah! Haven't heard those names in a while, have you, boys? Rawa. Actually, if you head down the Euphrates River from Fallujah, Ramadi, and you head towards Syria, you're going to bump into Al-Qaim, you're going to bump into Rawa. And I would have thought they would actually have been a little bit further out in the desert. So, anyway. Also, in a news conference following a counterterrorism summit attended by 75 nations, General Joe Dunford said ISIS is fighting in an ever-shrinking battlefield. Quote, foreign fighters flows into Syria have nearly stopped. There was 40,000 a few years ago. The flow has nearly stopped. Also, foreign fighters are unable to get out of Syria, and we believe we've cut their revenue down to the lowest level ever, and their outside sources of funding are now entirely severed. How about that? And again, a lot of this, the conception of this, John Allen was a part of you know, what Barack Obama put together that conceived this, and then the finishing touches, the guy who spanned both administrations is Joe Dunford, and then with the addition of I think James Mattis as the Secretary of Defense and some tweaking to troop levels, you have seen this thing come home in a way that I think Americans ought to be very impressed and proud with, and impressed in what way? Impressed that there's not been any significant loss of American life, and that is not easy to do when you're talking about Mosul and when you're talking about Raqqa. Honestly, I question, like, well, who's going to fight in Raqqa? You don't have the Iraqi army. And, wow. The other thing I will say is, if you've seen any videotape from the areas that have been fought in, they just get annihilated. You know, so really it's the use of supporting arms and munitions. Wow. that, you know, push them into a certain area, and then we'll use precision guided munitions and kill them, and then you can keep moving, and you can deal with the squirters. But we're not going to send people against strong points. We're not in that business. And we're not even talking about Americans. We're talking about other forces, Iraqi forces, and then the Free Syrian forces in and around Raqqa. So that seems to be, with American air traffic, you know, JTACs on the ground that are providing close air support, that also, you know, are providing artillery support, that seems to be the way it is. So, anyway, Secretary of Defense out in the Pacific, Rex Tillerson bouncing around the globe. So, pretty busy time right now. Secretary of Defense is in leaves Thailand for South Korea today with more discussions about what to do about North Korea. So that's kind of a little interesting piece. And then one more story I wanted to get to. Oh, it's a story in the Washington Post. And the headline is, Iraq is not the place for U.S. and Iran to fight out their rivalry. As Iraqi forces reclaim the last stretches of territory held by the Islamic State, Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi said he would not allow his country to become an arena for the United States, Iran, and Sunni powers, read Saudi Arabia, to fight out their rivalries. We would like to work with you, both of you, Abadi said of the United States and Iran, but please don't bring your trouble inside Iraq. You can't sort it you can sort it anywhere else. His comments came in a wide-ranging interview Tuesday with the Kurdish referendum on independence last month. His decision to send troops into areas disputed by his government and the Kurds and the anticipated post-Islamic State era. The Prime Minister said the United States has begun to draw down its military presence in the country from its peak of 5,200 troops since the battle with the Islamic State began. He said the U.S. air power won't be needed after the Islamic State is defeated in an area in western Iraq along the Syrian border. Right. Right. We've heard that before, right? And then what happened? Somebody balled up, and what did the Iraqi army do? They left. And then you had the Islamic State. So film at 11. Well, one more quote. Iraq is getting stronger, getting unified, Abadi said during the interview. I think others, or the interference of others in the affairs of Iraq, will become less and less. This is a new built confidence among Iraqis, the Iraqi national feeling, which our aim is to increase, people's attachment to their own country. Abadi rejected the notion that the United States is questioning Iranian-backed Shiite militias in Iraqi military operations, with accusations that Iran is largely in control of the decision to move troops into the Kurdish region. Abadi rejected that. He said he is sympathetic to Kurdish aspirations for independence, but their unilateral steps toward full autonomy was a threat to regional security. Abadi said he warned Masoud Barzani, the president of the Kurdish region, ahead of the referendum, that he risked being on the wrong side of history. In all honesty, I think his aspiration has been pushed back many years now, Abadi said, adding that Kurdish independence would require nationwide consensus. So, again, this is the question of Iraq, and we're here again. And so his comments are very interesting. So they're going to try to recreate Iraq again. How is that going to happen? And a couple other stories that I just want to get to real quick, and then we'll get to General Vaskowski. Anyway, Navy is still mum on the cause of a ship crash near the Korean Peninsula. Nearly 6 months after the guided missile cruiser Lake Champlain collided with a 70-foot fishing vessel east of the Korean Peninsula, Navy officials are declining to disclose what caused the crash. Officials say that Captain Chris Sigelski, the ship's CO at the time, was administratively disciplined after the collision, along with the executive officer and sailors who were on the watch team. But Sigelski remained in charge of the ship until he handed over command last month during a standard change of command ceremony. The Lake Champlain's May 9th mishap was one of four this year within the 7th Fleet. The Navy fired the captains of the other three ships. Like the Fitz and the McCain collisions, a primary question in the Lake Champlain incident is how a civilian vessel was able to close in on a state-of-the-art warship. No one was injured when the San Diego Bay ship collided with the South Korean vessel late that morning, close to noon, according to the Navy. The ship was deployed as part of the Carl Vinson Strike Group. An internal Navy investigation into the Lake Champlain incident was completed in June. This week, the Navy denied the Navy Times Freedom of Information request for a copy of the investigation, a decision currently being appealed. Pacific Fleet spokesman Lieutenant Commander Nicole Schwegman said it won't be released because, quote, it is privileged information due to pending litigation. She declined further comment. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from Brigadier General Ron Baskowski. We're going to pick up the interview that you heard a piece of yesterday, and then we'll hear the rest of the story, if you will, and his comments about mental health. So General Ron Baskowski talking about Beirut. Coming up next on a Thursday morning. Don't touch that dial.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of the 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner's looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nielsen. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts with 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug, scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. farewell promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of products at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do, and I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the SOF community should be aware of.
The Global SOF Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Seven minutes after nine on a Thursday, joining me, as he does, is Michael Musselman. Yankees fired their manager this morning. What do you think? Good move, bad move?
I don't think it was the right move, no.
Oh, really? All right.
No, knee-jerk reaction, man.
What about, did you think the Red Sox firing John Farrell was a good move?
Yeah.
You did? Oh, you did?
Yeah, I think that was a solid move on their part.
So the Red Sox made a good move, Yankees bad move? Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't agree with the Yankee one, but.
I'm surprised. But the articles coming out of New York are all saying that, you know, after 10 years it was time for him to go, that wasn't university-liked anymore, and everybody's only got so much goodwill in a job like that. It happened to Farrell in Boston, and it was with the Yankees, with these young players. They probably need to do something else, which surprised me because I thought Girardi did well. But, you know, you don't, just like somebody in command, you don't know if you don't go to work there every day.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, let's talk about the World Series last night. How crazy was that?
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Okay, tell me the best part of the game wasn't Puig throwing his glove down.
He's such a... again, he's what's wrong with the sport, man. I mean...
No, he's crazy.
Freaking crybaby, dude.
He's not. Look, he's not what's wrong with the sport. He's crazy, okay? There's other substantial things that are wrong with sports, and there are people that aren't crazy that do stupid stuff on a regular basis. He is in a different category. He is just a crazy person that happens to be a good baseball player. But if you missed it, there's a ball hit down the right field line. He dives for it, and if he makes it, it's going to be an incredible catch. And it hits off his glove, and then it ricochets, and it goes out of play, so it's a double. he finishes sliding head first. He hops up, and like a pissed off 6 year old, he takes his glove, and he didn't like toss it towards the ground. He slams it in the ground. It was it was hilarious. At least I thought it was. But anyway, you just let that guy out there and leave him alone because he's out in his own place.
He's not. See, the outfielder for the Astros that used to be Yankees. What's his name?
He used to be a Yankee?
Yeah.
There's a catcher. Oh, Carlos Beltran?
No. He used to be a Yankee. Now he plays for the Astros. I can't. He got a great hit off last night. I can't think of his name though.
No, well, this is center fielder. Is Springer. Left field.
Who's right field?
The left fielder is a guy named Marwan Gonzalez, and then the guy from right field is a guy who played for the Red Sox, Reddick. Josh Reddick.
No, it's not who. Reddick? He's a black guy.
Oh, you're thinking of Cameron Mabry.
Yeah, Mabry. Mabry used to be a Yankee, right?
No. He played for the Padres. He played for the Angels. Let me tell you, he's not very good either. And he did get a big hit. He did get a
big
hit.
Yeah, he got a pretty solid hit that kept him in the game. So.
It was. But let me tell you, balls were flying out of Dodger Stadium last night. They set a world record, a World Series record.
Eight
home runs.
That's ridiculous.
It was. And I want to say in the last inning, the Dodgers were just ripping balls all over the place. The first guy, Seager, hits a line shot to the warning track in right center field. It gets run down. The next one is a line drive that the third baseman catches. Then Puig rifles one into the bleachers for a home run, and then they get the final out. But it was like, yeah, somebody better make sure you got your cup on because nobody's fooling anybody now. It was, I thought it was hilarious. But, so the series even. One game apiece. Email.
Going to Houston.
Going to Texas. All right, email. Mac, are you a JFK assassination guy? Are you at all excited at the release of these documents? How about the Gunner? I'm not so much. I mean, as an Irish Catholic, my grandmother used to save those Life magazines all about the Kennedys and stuff, and she was devastated when he was killed, as the nation was. But you know what? I think a lot of people, you get tired of just the craziness that you see on TV all the time about that event. And I kind of pay attention to it to see if there's anything that breaks squelch. But am I one of those conspiracy theorists? Not so much. Gunner?
Mm-mm. Definitely not. These documents, they speculate, all they're going to do is they're going to make the CIA look like a bunch of fools like they are. You know, that they knew that, you know, what's the shit for brains? Goddamn, who killed JFK?
Oswald.
I can't think of his name. Yeah, Lee Harvey Oswald. They're going to prove that they knew that he was this wacko, and they're probably trying to turn him and didn't let anybody know in the FBI or anybody else know, and that he was capable of doing this, and that they probably had the plans, and again, they were trying to intervene through this crazy weird shit, and then it got out of hand, and boom, president's dead, and now they got mud on their face, so mud on their hands.
I hope that's not the case, because you and I were just talking about that relative to the 9/11 thing and the that program, The Road to 9/11, which is which says, hey, it looks like the CIA didn't tell the FBI to yoke these guys up when they knew where they were in San Diego because the CIA was trying to turn them. And
yeah, I think that this is going to be the same result.
I hope it's not.
I mean, they're the only ones begging the president not to release these things. you know. They're saying that, you know, it will disrupt their intelligence gathering. Dude, that was years and years ago.
Oh, my God. Next email. Can we talk current events real quick? Does either one of you think there's anything to the uranium thing, or is it just more mudslinging in Washington, D.C.?
You know, if this turns out the way they're reporting this, this is going to be one of those, are you kidding me? This is not even, a Hollywood writer can even come with a script of, you know, the DNC involved in all this bullshit, and then getting this British, you know, former spook, you know, to make the Republican look bad, and then it turns out you were the ones planning this whole thing in the get-go. Oh, and all of it being connected to, again, to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, to me, that's a bit much. In terms of the uranium thing, just in terms of broad issues, so we're going to allow a company to be bought, that, you know, and so that a Russian controlled company that controls 20% of our uranium. I mean, how does that make sense to anybody?
Yeah,
I don't know the details of it, but if you walk in and say, hey, let me just give you the view from 30,000 feet. Bottom line is this company controls this, they want to be purchased by this company, and we've got to okay it. 30,000 foot answer? No. God, of course not.
Yeah. What are you thinking? Why do you bring this up?
Yeah,
to me?
Why would
you're fired?
Yeah, why would we even discuss this? That we would allow, in some way, shape, or form, you want me to believe that a Russian firm is going to control this, and there's no nefarious ties, it's a legitimate Russian company. There is no such thing.
No, and like you said, regular people go to jail for this, man. I mean, a company donates a large sum of money to a foundation who happens to be connected to the Secretary of State at the time. And, I mean, good God, man. I mean,
yeah, it is.
If you don't see the writing on the wall that this lady needs to go to jail, they have written books. Let her write a book about her time in solitary confinement.
I wonder if that would be a good seller. Thoughts by myself. Mm-hmm. Thoughts by myself.
Yeah. 23 hours alone a day.
Thoughts by myself. Yeah, again, I don't know, but again, this is our political, this is what we get. This is what
we
get.
Exactly. This is what we pay him for.
And so my greater thought is, at some point,
if you're a career politician and you're a multi-millionaire and all you've done is be a politician, there is something wrong with our system. You don't own a legitimate company. All you do is you're a politician and you become a multi-millionaire. How does that thing happen? Only in America, boys.
Only in America. It is. Somebody ought to change the system.
Yeah, it's not like the Clintons were old money. You know? Right.
Are you kidding me? It's still drying.
Yeah.
It's still drying as they throw it in the bank.
Oh.
But they've leveraged a little bit of their business. I don't know. It's just, again, and, you know, the whole dirt digging, first of all, that whole dossier thing started by, they haven't found out who yet, but started from a Republican opponent of Trump. So you got a relatively small group for that. And then the Democrats wound up paying according to the president, over $6 million for it. And then they lie about it. But, I mean, is that just, yep. That's just what we've learned. That's just the way American politics is. What you get
just as usual.
Yeah, yep. We expect them to tell the truth. Come on now. That isn't going to happen. So I don't know. It's I'm trying to turn over a bit of a new leaf and not get upset about it. It is what it is, and I guess it's we're stupid if we get upset about it. And the only stupid event in it is the fact that you're surprised by it, because we see it over and over again. Guy like Bernie Sanders, right? He and his wife, and you know, the way they try to leverage their political, power through loans and a university, and it blows up in their face, and then he gets called on it, and it's like, and you begin to watch the news reports on that, and you're like, wow, just shady, right? And then you get the Clintons, the Clampets, right? The hillbillies come to town and they're just raking it in everywhere. I mean, you would think that the Clinton Foundation, while I'm the Secretary of State, nobody that I do business with, is going to be able to donate to it, because it's just the look of that is inappropriate. They didn't play it like that. And so,
it doesn't even cross their mind.
Right, and so, and then you watch, the nightly back and forth on in the media of who's worse, the Democrats or the Republicans. Okay, now the president's vindicated. Well, come on now, give that guy 15 minutes, man. He can't stay out of it. He's the guy that you have by the shirt, right? Who you don't want to jump in the pool, and he's like ripping his shirt off. He's tearing buttons. I gotta get in the pool, and you're like, no, don't get in the pool, don't get in the pool. No, and he's in the pool. He can't stay out of it. But again, we all know the reason Donald Trump got elected is because the majority of the nation, at least in terms of the Electoral College, is fed up with Washington inside politics, and they want something else. And so we've got something else, but it certainly is not very pleasant to look at. Here's another email. Can we do gun talk? Mike?
Can we do gun talk?
I was looking at modular stocks. I've never owned one. Does the gunner have any basic guidance in terms of buying modular stock? Is that even the right term? Is that the right term, Mike?
Yeah, that would be, you could do that. So, I mean, my guns, all have modular stocks. So,
okay.
I mean, I'm trying to think.
Could you explain to people who might not know what they are, what a modular stock is?
It adjusts to you as an individual. I mean, so you can have a cheek rise, so it allows for elevation so your cheek sits firmly on the stock.
Okay.
Length of pull, so that you can adjust the buttstock of the gun to shorter or longer, depending on your body type. I mean, there's a lot of things you can do with it, but yeah. And if you're going to do modular stocks for guns, the best modular stocks on the gun, in the market right now are Magpul.
Magpul?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Magpul stocks, anything. So so finish that. And then we need to talk about Leupold Optics, why you don't like them. That became a little bit of an issue. I'm not going to lie to you here.
Why I don't like them?
Yes, well, you don't like them.
No, that's the...
Oh, no. Why you like them and why Montana Man doesn't like them.
The YouTuber video man that shoots through YouTube.
Why you took him to task for that. So finish the modular stock thing.
Modular stocks. Go ahead.
How many different elements adjust on those things? So you mentioned that, the buttstock itself is adjustable, so you can lengthen it or shorten it. You mentioned eye relief. Is that something that your cheek rests against?
What your cheek rests against.
Okay,
yeah.
So that's adjustable. Anything else?
You could have a riser on the bottom that would allow for when you're doing bench shooting to sit level with your bipods up front. So, I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can do. And then most modular stocks come with some kind of detachment device where slings should snap into. So you're not threading it through a sling keeper type thing. You can put it anywhere on the stock that allows for comfort.
All right. Anything else?
I mean, there's a ton of stuff. Mine, like I said, my stocks that I have are extremely modular. They're not just those two things. The butt stock can go up and down, so it fits in your shoulder better. I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can do.
All right, let's talk about scopes now.
Okay.
All right. What are you a fan of? What are you not a fan of?
I'm a fan. I have Leopolds, and I have Schmidt and Benders, and I have, let's see, Schmidt and Bender, Leopold, and that's probably it. Now, the argument is people don't, there's a lot of new companies. Night Force, Vortex, they make good scopes, and don't get me wrong, I mean, I think I have a Vortex. I'm not sure.
A Vortex?
Yeah, a Vortex scope. They're good scopes. They're really good scopes. And they're not as pricey, which is nice. But, you know, the fact that it's, you know, it all comes down to what you're looking to, clarity of the glass, the lenses, the availability of reticle patterns, the adjustments, the bulkiness, the weight, you know, all of those things combined. And so, I mean, with all that said and done, that's why I'm still a Leopold fan, because they're a proven scope. They're really good. There's other scopes that are out there that are just as good, and that's personal preference.
Right.
But, you know, just because the scope, you had a bad deal with a scope, well, you know, I can say I've never had a bad deal with any of my scopes, but my scopes are a little pricey.
How pricey?
Well over $1,000. I mean, some of them are, you know, about $1,500. I think the most expensive scope I own is about a $5,000 scope.
Now, do you get all these things for free?
Sometimes, but sometimes, I mean, I get them at a very reasonable discounted price.
And so how do you do that? Do you meet reps? Are you teaching shooting and you bump into a rep and they say, hey, why don't you?
I teach and I do stuff people still, you know, advice from people. They like, you know, feedback, and you give them feedback. And I mean, there's all sorts of ways you can do it.
So you're not paying retail for any of these?
No. I don't think I've ever paid retail for anything.
any gun item anyway?
Yeah.
Or any bike that you've ever bought?
Yeah.
That was a good deal, too. All right. Another email. I love gun talk. It's the best. Back in the day, we used to use a 5.56 round to rotate the front sight post. Is that still done? Is that a thing of the past?
Yeah, that's the thing of the past, man. I mean,
something in the movie.
Your front sight post. I do not own. There's no gun that I own that has a front sight post anymore, like the old M16 tower post, they call it.
Right.
That's just way outdated. That's a thing of the past.
Dating yourself, bro.
No.
Get it together. Yeah. The another email. Awesome gun talk. Can we do ammunition talk? Does Mike have a preferred supplier that he would go to relative to any ammunition? And then are there certain types of ammunition that he gravitates to certain vendors? Oh, it's just an interesting little question.
All of my precision rifles, every precision rifle that I use, bolt action, where I want accuracy, I want repeatability, I want it to be dependable, I want every single shot to be exactly the same. I use Burger bullets.
Burger bullets?
Mm-hmm.
How do you spell it?
B-E-R-G-E-R, Burger. I use Burger ammunition on all my precision guns.
Burger bullets, varmint, target hunting, and tactical bullets. Yeah,
those are without a doubt some of the best bullets that are on the market today. They're pricey, but
Berger bullets.com with bullets with an S.
Yeah, fantastic bullets, reliable, dependable, repeatable.
Talk to me about repeatable. What does that mean?
It means that, you know, the bullet's going to perform the same every single time. I mean, so they're match grade bullets. They're meticulously quality controlled. I mean, they're balanced. Everything on them is just, perfection. Every component of that bullet is quality. I mean, it is super quality. And so those are my rifle rounds, my bolt action rounds. Pistol rounds, I use two different types. I use Hornady, and then I use a spear.
Okay, stop. I just went to the Burger Bullets website. And I'm looking at this jello block, this gel block that they fire a round into it, all right? And it shows the round penetration, and it shows like a column of turbulence in this thing. And then about, I don't know, it looks like an inch or two, maybe an inch into it, this thing expands. Can you walk us through, is that the round flattening out so it initial penetrates in a casing?
Yes.
And then, because then what you see is it looks like, how would I even describe this thing?
What you're looking at is two different things. So when the bullet first enters, that energy being released into that media, flesh, or that, in that case, ballistic gelatin.
Right.
That expansion that you're going to see of that media being torn and pushed apart, mm-hmm. and being opened up, that's called the temporary wound cavity. So, you know, that's that energy being released in the temporary wound cavity. That's fine. The problem is most of the stuff you shoot into, if you're shooting at animals, their internal organs are liquid and very fluid. So it's just going to push them out of the way. It doesn't cause a lot of damage. It disrupts them. But what you're looking for is what they call the permanent wound cavity. That's after the bullet stopped. How much of that damage then, after it collapsed back down, you see that channel that's been created.
Right.
And that's the permanent wound cavity. That's something that, you know, as it goes through organs and the lethal part of an animal, how much of it actually causes the damage that actually results in the incapacitation, the death of the animal. And you don't want overexpansion. You don't want that bullet to keep going all the way through. You want it to hit, immediately expand, start tearing apart all that flesh, and then to travel, you know, the thickness of the animal, and then to stop. You don't want it to over-penetrate. You don't want it to go all the completely through. You want all that energy released when it hits.
And that, so how do you...
So what you look for is when you pull that bullet out, you fire five rounds.
Right.
And then what they do is they pull out the five rounds, and then they weigh it to make sure it retained its mass. It didn't fragment. They look for expansion, so they measure the, you know, so let's say, if we're talking inches, you know, a 300 caliber bullet, you know, 308 and things like that, 7.62, a three, a .3 caliber, so .38 third of an inch, how much does that bullet expand? You know, most of the times it's going to expand in that case probably about 0.5, so almost a half an inch. So looking for controlled expansion, weight, and then depth of penetration, and then they measure the cavity, how big the cavity is. And so if you, good bullet, you can fire five Berger bullets and they'll do, every single time, they'll do the same thing. People want bullets that won't perform every single way. I mean, all the time, the same way. You want bullets, that will do the repeatability. They'll do the exact same thing every single time, not variations of it. Some will expand, some won't, some will break apart, some will yaw and spin and tumble. And then when you really get in depth, then you start shooting at different media. Like, so if you want to penetrate a car door or glass or wood or sheetrock or heavy clothing, then you put that in front of the gel block. Because then that bullet, you know, when it hits that first target media, then it's going to start doing what it's supposed to do.
Another email. Mac, I think among shooters, you'll find that what Gunner is saying is absolutely spot on. Berger bullets have a reputation for high quality, accuracy, and the word he used, which is probably the most important for a shooter, is repeatability. Pretty high quality stuff. He's spot on. So don't give him any shit about it. Oh, really? That's not how this works. So what's Montana Man's problem with the, why does he love a scope that you think is not very good?
He thinks they're too pricey. I mean, you can buy a Vortex for half the price you can buy a Leopold. So, I mean, it gets you in there, which is good, but I guess I'm too much of a perfectionist.
He's not? Have you ever shot with him?
Mm. No. Well, M4s on the range in Afghanistan, you know, government guns.
Right. Other than that, no?
No.
Okay. As long as we're talking guns, I was reading an article, and I've seen it come up before. There's a magazine the Marine Corps is buying. It performs supposedly poorly in extremely cold weather. Yet it seems to be a very popular magazine. Is Gunner familiar with the issue, and could he explain it? Mike?
So, yeah, this is how... he's probably talking about the Magpul, the P-Mag or the E-Mag,
yep.
The Enhanced
yep.
magazine or the, yeah. So what, when they say poorly in cold weather, so one of the tests that the government does is loads a magazine, with ammo and then puts it into this, basically a freezer, a chamber that brings the temperature down to literally like a negative 35 degrees below zero. And because it's polymer, the polymer material becomes quite fragile. And so it has issues at that time of extreme cold. The problem I have with that is we don't operate negative 35 or whatever they're trying to lock these things in. We don't have Marines. The only frontier that we'd fight something like that would be like, in the high Ural Mountains of Russia or in, you know, the northern parts of Mongolia. How many times have we been there? How many times has civil war broken out into these areas? No one fucking lives there. You know why? Because it's too cold. So there's no chance of it. They go to the extreme. I'm not saying that we'll never fight a war in extreme cold, but, you know, hell, if the man that's shooting the gun can operate at that temperature, the magazine, I'm not worried about the magazine. Because the human's going to die from exposure. He's never going to even deploy his gun. So, I mean, worry about, if that's the case, then you know what? Worry about buying boots and clothing and gear and everything else that can survive those type of temperatures. And then we'll talk about the gun.
Just for the sake of it, what is the coldest weather that you've ever been out in?
The coldest?
Yeah. And
probably like 15 below, something like that, below zero.
Coldest wind chill?
Oh, wind chill? Then add maybe another 10 degrees, so 25 degrees below zero at wind chill.
Yeah, I think the coldest I was ever in was, it would have been December of 2003. And my family is driving me down to Minneapolis. And we started out in North Dakota. The wind chill was 44 below zero. The air temperature was,
say... Well, you weren't in it, though.
No. Well, you had to go out. You had to go outside in it. And let me just tell you.
What, for 15 seconds?
As Mike said, you can't function in it. You know, when you see guys who fought at the Chosin Reservoir, you know, that was, you know, between 10 and 20 below... but if they would have had 20, 30 miles an hour winds, the Chinese would have froze to death. There would have been nobody to shoot.
I mean,
you can't function.
Even at Chosin Reservoir, when it was 15 below zero, like the vehicles didn't operate. The artillery pieces didn't operate. Hydraulic fluid froze. I mean, again, you can't operate in those kinds of extreme temperatures.
Yeah, so when you hear the magazine doesn't function at 35 degrees below zero, it's like, okay, it'll be right in there with the rest of us because we won't be functioning either.
Yeah. Well, then let's heat the magazine up to 185 degrees of, degrees. It doesn't function either. Well, you're dead too. Stupid.
Hey, when you would hear this stuff, did you just like close your eyes and going, oh my God, I can't do this?
Yeah. Oh, I was just like, oh. So when I was in, when we were fighting for the PMAG and EMAG, they kept coming back to the USGI steel magazine that's spot, electronically spot welded six places or three places along the back seam of the magazine. The problem is that even a normal day, 72 degrees, degrees Fahrenheit, beautiful day, you drop that magazine on a hard surface and it cracks that weld, the magazine's broken, boys.
Yeah.
So let's look at realistic, instead of talking about these extremes, let's talk about realistic shit.
I hate that. I hate when we do that. It's a good question because it continues to pop up in different spots relative to the Department of Defense.
Right.
Mac, you commented earlier about three carriers in the Pacific not knowing if one was coming, one was going, and there's simply an overlap because the president's going to be in the area, or if there's actually three carriers out there now. What does the gunner have to say? Mike? Deployment of three
operations. That's stretching it, boys and girls. Oh my goodness. It's put three carriers at sea fully operational. That's a Herculean task.
So how long do you think we're going to fake it and do that? A week? Maybe two?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe two. And it'll be the overlap. And then they're counting that third carrier still being deployable because it's 20 miles off the California coast because it's limping back home.
Technically, it is in the Pacific. Okay, just so everybody knows, it is in the Pacific, technically.
Yeah, if it's moored to the pier in Coronado Island, it's still Pacific Ocean.
San Diego.
If it's in dry dock.
San Diego Bay.
It's completely up on stilts in the dry dock, and that dry dock is in the Pacific Ocean, technically the Pacific Ocean.
But the three. So again, I haven't seen the footnotes to go with that. But
yeah, and to find that many planes that are deployable in an operational squadron, they've cut and pasted, man.
Yeah, because we're in case you haven't read, we're having problems getting up in the air, and that's not changing anytime soon. So
no.
So and it sounds good though. You know, it sounds good, but you start putting it together. So my hunch is somebody was going home. Somebody's going out there. They sped somebody up and slowed somebody down, and we'll drive. We'll do that for however long. And then somebody's got to go home. Because let me tell you, they have dry dock they got to do. They got repairs they got to have. They've got all this stuff contracted for those ships. Trust me, we're not breaking that. Here's the news headline. Trump's 355-ship fleet will take until 2050s. Damn, I wanted to see that, too. Guess not.
Which one?
President Trump says he wants to get to 355 ships, but that'll probably take until the 2050s, according to the Navy's number two civilian. Listen to this. And here's a quote. To quote the Rolling Stone, you can't always get what you want, said Thomas D., who has served for 8 months as a Navy undersecretary in the absence of a Trump nominee. So we want a 355-ship Navy. We may want it very, very soon, and perhaps we'll be able to get there. But we're going to have to work with our partners over on the Hill. When can we get there? 2055. Oh, okay. Nice. So there you have it, Mike. 2055.
So I'm looking at this. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 carrier air wings.
Yes.
Okay. So that means we have 9 carriers.
Explain to everybody what a carrier air wing is.
It's composite squadrons that are assigned to carriers, and you got your fighters, your attack aircraft, your helicopters, your supply, all those things.
Roughly 78
aircraft make up a carrier air wing. So, you know, so your carriers are the Truman, the Vinson, the Eisenhower, the Reagan, the Lincoln, the Bush, the Stennis, and the Nimitz, and the Roosevelt. And so if you think about the Roosevelt, the Nimitz, the Stennis, the Eisenhower, and the Vinson and the Truman are old carriers compared to what's out there.
That's amazing, because when we were back in the day, those things were brand spanking new, man. They were state of the art.
Well, yeah, but back in the day, we had like 17, 18 carriers.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you go
nine,
you
and go, then half of the nine, more than half of the nine, five of the nine are basically outdated aircraft carriers.
Yeah, you'd go, you could see two or three in San Diego Bay, and that's not counting the USS Intrepid, by the way. Yeah, you know, depending on when you were there, at one time there was three tied up in San Diego. Because you could park two of them back to back, and then there
right.
You could park one around the corner. And so, we used to have a bunch. Oh, God Almighty! How do we think we're going to do all this stuff with such a small force? I don't know. That's something I want. Like, so you really believe that's going to work? Yeah. We're gonna have fewer ships. We're gonna minimally man them, and it's all gonna come together good. Okay, look,
yeah.
I want cheaper ships. I want a lot more of them. And I want to man them so that we could actually do damage control and still fight the ship. How about that? What? Yeah, that's what I want.
Yep.
Oh, sorry. We can't do that. We want ships that can turn around and neutral steer in the middle of rivers. What? Yeah, that's what we want. We want them to neutral steer in shallow water. Yeah, because that's where all the wars are going to get fought, and we want to be a part of it. Do you know what's going to happen when you take one of those goddamn things up a river, son? Let me get Mike Musselman on the phone, and he can tell you about going up the river between Fallujah and Ramadi. He can tell you what happened. They towed down their German-made 88 millimeter that they have left over from World War II, and they start pumping rounds into your littoral ship because they know there's only one way in and one way out, bro. You trust me, you don't want to do that. Stay at the coast, hang out, try to stay awake, and just be cool. Be cool. The here's another one. Hey, since we're talking about the Navy, if you were the CNO, what would be the first thing you would do for the Navy? That's an interesting question. Mike, if you were the CNO, what would you do? First thing you do for the Navy, not the Marine Corps, the Navy.
Oh, man.
That's a dream come true, right?
Yeah. Shoot, dude, I don't know what I would do. I would...
Yeah, one thing you can't do.
I would definitely try and change the leadership around. You know, I would do a, I would audit, figure out where we're investing, you know, all our time and energy and our money into, and find out if it's worth it. It would be. That's a difficult question, man. There's just not one thing. Yeah, I would try and turn around the whole mindset of it.
The organization?
You know, yeah.
Well, we're going to see.
Try and get back to that warfighting mentality.
SecDef is going to get a crack at that when these investigations become public. Somebody just sent me two stories, and we'll end on this. Max, check these little gems out. Here's the title. It's from Air Force Times. It says, Air Force says Santa isn't real, immediately regrets it. A spirited Twitter spat between the Air Force bases turned unexpectedly dark Wednesday when the Air Force's official Twitter account dropped a bombshell. Santa isn't real. The inter-service Twitter feud between Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota and Whiteman Air Force Base in Missouri began boiling over Monday as each claimed their bombers were better. The Giffen MAME-laden scuffle escalated until the Air Force's main account tried to separate the two Tuesday morning by declaring, "All right, that's it. You guys leave me no choice. No television for a week." But like quarreling siblings, the two continued it despite the parental intervention. Minot tattled at Whiteman Air Force Base started it, to which Whiteman posted multiple gifts declaring Minot's assertion were lies, and it shows Will Ferrell in his elf costume. You can keep that throne. You do be looking good, though. And then the Air Force went out and said that Santa isn't real. And then that exploded.
Sure.
In the headlines.
They're the guys that track Santa, aren't they?
My God.
Well, they have that website through NORAD?
Yeah, NORAD.
Yeah, there you go. Good job. There's great public relations there, Air Force. Good job.
Look, if you want to get your ass in trouble, do stuff like this.
Yeah.
You'll get your ass in trouble. For one, don't you have something better to do? And, I think that... Yeah. Here's the other story. Air Force Academy lacrosse coaches, players suspended. There's no more details.
No.
It said, we hold our staff and faculty to the highest standards, and the Academy goes to great lengths to provide culture rooted in core principles of human dignity and respect. Air Force Academy, that's the second time in a month they've been in the news for something stupid. So there you have it. All right, what are you doing today?
I don't know.
You going to the petroleum club? You got a lunch date? You're always doing something fun at lunch.
Yeah, I'm actually meeting some people at Christina's. So.
Okay.
That's about it.
All right. I'll be in Dallas later tonight if you want to swing by and walk with me
through
through the airport. No?
Yeah, for 30 minutes. You'll probably be late. You'll probably miss your connection. So
I thought we were friends. No, I'm going to go. And then I get to drive for a couple of days. Mike, when you drive cross country, do you get in and drive, or do you drive like 8 hours a day and then go take a nap, or when you drive
until I'm done driving?
Do you? See, I'm the same way.
In and out, man.
What's the most miles that you can drive in a day?
I drove from Stafford, Virginia, back to San Diego without resting.
How many hours?
Just getting gas.
How many hours did it take you?
I don't remember. I left like on Friday. I left Friday evening and got into my house in San Clemente, I think Sunday morning, just before noon.
I've done it twice. Once 53 hours and once 48 hours. Same thing. Left Virginia, headed to California. And you know, one of the things you do learn in the Marine Corps is you could stay up for a couple of days without sleep. The second day,
right.
The second night's harder. So you need to have like coffee and dip and things like that. But the first 24 hours?
$5 energy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, they didn't have those when I did it. So the window had to be down and things like that to stay awake. But, you know, once the sun starts to come up, your body naturally re-energizes. And then on the second day, you're going to be home. And so, no, I've done that too. But I'll probably drive 1,100 miles a day for 2 days and then be back in Sacramento by Sunday about noon. So that's my plan anyway. And then driving east to west, you pick up 3 hours, and that's no small event. So
I like when I get in the car, man. I do not like stopping, and you know, like my wife, on the other hand, she'll plan a hotel stop, you know, where me personally, if I get tired, I just pull over to a truck stop,
right,
and get a chair back.
Go to sleep. I went back to Virginia with my two sons. I want to say John was probably 12 and Patrick's 9. So we're driving probably through Texas, maybe Missouri. And I said, hey, I've got to sleep. And they're like, where are we going to sleep? I'm like, in the back of the truck? They're like, what?
Yeah.
What? I'm like, what do you mean? We don't have your mom here. We're not going to go to a hotel. They're like, well, what happens if somebody, like, shows up? So I pull out my .45. I said, and then what? They're like, is it loaded? I said, well, it's not any good if it's not. Is it there, boys?
Yeah, it's just a hunk of metal, then.
What are you going to do with it? Well, we're going to put it under the pillow, and then we're all going to go to sleep. They looked at me like, okay, Dad. And then we laid down in the back of the truck, and we went to sleep for, you know, I don't know. How many hours of sleep do you need, Mike? 3, 4 to get going again?
Oh, 30 minutes,
yeah.
An hour.
Yeah. And so, you know, you sleep, you get up, and looking at you all cross-eyed. Let's go, boys! But, anyway. All right, that's funny. All right, man, thanks for the visit.
I'll talk to you later.
Go Astros. That is the gunner here. On a, on a Thursday. That's actually a Friday. No show tomorrow. Best stuff starts immediately after this. You'll hear this program in its entirety, and then after that, you'll just start hearing great show after great show after great show after great show after great show. So anytime you want to tune in over the course of the weekend, yeah, go ahead, pick them. Zinni Kelly Allen, Jeremiah Workman. You'll hear Ron Baskowski again talk about mental health. Barney Barnum, Medal of Honor winner in Vietnam. Very cool stuff. But let me just tell you, if you want to, there's incredible stuff in the archives of All Marine Radio. Yeah, jaw-dropping stuff. Go back and listen to Matt Gospodinovich, his interview, you know, that I ran earlier this week about being a Lance Corporal in Beirut. Right? Joe Lance Corporal. It's an awesome interview. And then living, trying to live with him. What you see and trying to make sense of it. Yeah, him describing the Missouri firing from the Med. Sound like a train going overhead, man. I'm not going to lie to you. Anyway, have a great day. As I said, this program repeats itself, and then the best of tomorrow. So, without further ado, on a Thursday, All Marine Radio, over and out.